Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you, sir.
We're
How
good, Marie.
are
Thank you. Jason, do you need the video to be on?
you? Ideally, yes, but if Moby is camera shy, I'm happy to for him to hide behind his name. But yeah, entirely up to him. It is, after all, his show. Katja, are you going to record and then send to me post?
Yes,
Eh?
I
Okay,
will be.
that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's not even an issue so much of
Recording in
camera
progress.
shy. It's I turned off my cameras after watching season one of Mr. Robot, and so it's just I've actually got tape over my cameras because I became paranoid after season one of Mr. Robot. So
I don't blame you at
not that
all.
there's anything, not that there's ever anything interesting going on in my house, but at the very least I thought I'd sort of protect myself. And that was a few years ago. And so I could find a different device and turn on the camera, but that might take up too much time.
Not at all. Now, yeah, let's crack on because I know you're the busiest man in what would we call it in music at the moment. And congratulations on Reprise. I think I'm hoping you've heard that more than 100 times this week.
I have not heard it much this week, but it's nice to hear. And also, I quite a while ago decided to stop reading reviews, and to stop. I basically about 10 years ago decided to stop reading any press that I do. I don't read reviews. I don't watch myself on television because I like to be sort of blissfully unaware of how I'm perceived publicly, because they're two, the double-edged terrible sword of public perception is when it's good, it fuels my ego, and when it's bad, it makes me want to blow my brains out. So
We don't want the
there's
latter.
really no, yeah, there's no upside for me to ever pay attention to how I'm perceived publicly. I'd much rather just sort of, I don't know, go hiking and play piano.
Yeah, which if I were you, I would do exactly the same thing. But no, I think it's that seems to echo throughout your career, and I think Reprise is an interesting moment, I'm sure, for you, kind of considering the journey of the last 30 years, and and a lot has happened, and just from the journey that you've had from being an unknown to becoming obviously world famous. In everything that I've kind of read about you over the years, and I've been doing this for about as long as you've been in music, is it's been a weird kind of struggle, like a love-hate relationship that you have with, as you're saying, you don't read your own reviews. Fame is something that you never sought, but then it happened. And then you kind of carried on that road, and you didn't divorce yourself from the process. And for a period of time, it was entirely unhealthy for you, but yet you stayed in it. And I'm very curious as to why you didn't disengage, why you didn't go hiking and sort of leave the space that was kind of toxic at a time.
Well, part of it is, if I'm being honest, that I'm still sort of stunned and fascinated by the fact that I've ended up being a quasi-public figure. Because when I was really, really young, not even really young, but like when I was in my teens, early 20s, you know, I was playing in punk rock bands. I was DJing to five people a night in a dive bar, and I was living in an abandoned factory. You know, I had no running water, I had no bathroom, and I was making around $2,000 a year. And I really never for a second thought that I would ever make music that anyone would listen to. You know, I mean, the punk rock band I was in, the first show we played out of state, out of, you know, we went to Ohio and we played a punk rock show in a pizza parlor, and there were more people in the bands than were in the audience. And that's so musically, that's the world I come from. And I never, I mean, so like every tiny or large aspect of public figure music music stuff that I've done has been baffling and surprising, and I'm still sort of intrigued by it. And I would say on a more, hopefully slightly more, at the risk of again being sort of, you know, maybe, I mean, this might sound very self-aggrandizing, but I think that there's a potential for noble action. And what I mean by that is I don't think I'm doing anything noble, but having an audience is unique. And I don't want to squander that, nor do I want to use that self-servingly. You know, I think that on one hand, having an audience is remarkable because people are at times willing to listen to the music that I've made. And I take that pretty seriously. Like, I want to, if someone's going to invite me into their home, into their personal life, I want to create something emotional and respectful of their time and attention. And then the other aspect, sorry for rambling on, but the other aspect is the, you know, having an audience enables me to draw attention, draw people's attention to issues that I think are important. So that's why, I mean, because, yeah, there are times when I've wanted to just sort of like lock the door and go for a hike and not come back. But I do sort of appreciate, you know, the idea of working on a daily basis and trying to work in a respectful way that has integrity, even if at times it seems fruitless or frustrating.
Because, I mean, you have been prolific, obviously, throughout your career, even when you weren't necessarily making kind of number one records. You've obviously dabbled in a number of areas. And as you say, the interesting thing is any musician obviously has ambitions of becoming famous. And in your case, you wanted to, it sounded like to me that you wanted to make just enough money to be able to do the thing that you loved and not necessarily become, you know, this global phenomenon that you and your music will certainly, that Reprise represents actually quite, you know, very well in a very different way.
Yeah, I mean, that aspect of things, there are a bunch of, from my perspective, a bunch of different facets to that. And one is, I guess, the extent to which any part of my life has involved planning or intention. And the truth is, none of it has. Like, there was never much of an effort on my part to plan anything or to have a strategy around things. And whenever I've tried to have a strategy, the universe just slaps me in the back of the head and says, it's like, what absurdity is this? And then, so there's this sort of the lack of planning and lack of intention, but then there's also the lack of possibility, meaning when I was, as I sort of mentioned before, when I was growing up, I never thought that having a career as a musician or making money or having any of these things, I didn't even think they existed even remotely in the realm of possibility. You know, I really thought that my existence, you know, was going to be spent playing obscure music that no one ever listened to, and at some point getting my doctorate in philosophy and becoming a philosophy professor. Like, that's how I sort of thought my life was going to go. And it's still very confusing to me and kind of interesting that isn't how things worked out.
And interesting that you say that, because, you know, with Deutsche Grammophon obviously approaching you and then obviously orchestrating, to use the term, orchestrated the creation of what Reprise has become. So they kind of got on with the admin. They did all of the kind of the backroom stuff and allowed you to go away and create the parts that you did. And as you say, if you had instigated that, the universe would have colluded otherwise. So you've been fortunate in your career to have a wonderful kind of network around you that freed you up to do the thing, you know, to stay true to your intention, I suppose.
I mean, that old expression of, you know, fortune favors the well-prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm well-prepared, but I, you know, I have a combination of like a good work ethic and quite a lot of experience and a deep love for what I do. So, for example, when Deutsche Grammophon approached me to make this record, I realized that like making an orchestral album with a gospel choir and a ton of different singers was logistically going to be very challenging. But, you know, and I do sort of wish that I had the professional structure that you're talking about, where I could just be like a whimsical, you know, I don't know, I was going to say like D.H. Lawrence or, you know, Lord Byron, just like wandering around having creative flights of fancy. But like, I am also an uptight wasp from Connecticut, so I get way too involved in the logistics and the mechanics of making things, which for an album like this, because there are so many moving parts, as opposed to normally how I make music, and I'm alone in my studio just by myself working on music, and logistically it's really easy. But this logistically was so challenging. So clearly Deutsche Grammophon were wonderful in helping, but like, boy, oh boy, it was a lot of work trying to get all these people involved.
But then yet again, you didn't go to Budapest. You didn't, you know, you decided to not get involved at that level, which is quite interesting.
Well, largely because I'd already done the arrangements. And I'd worked with an orchestra once before in a studio. And it was for one of the Jason Bourne movies. And so I had done my orchestral, I wrote my orchestral parts and I handed them over to an orchestrator who turned them into score for the orchestra. And then the score was handed to the conductor and handed to the orchestra. And I sat in the control room and I listened. Because at that point, you know, I didn't, like, I don't have the experience to walk into a giant studio and talk to 130 people playing classical instruments and give them directions. Like, I'd already done my job. And so there I was sitting on this, you know, like, old black leather couch in a Sony studio while the conductor recorded the orchestra. And I realized if I went to Hungary, I'd be doing the exact same thing. So I just had that ostensibly self-evident realization that I didn't need to fly 9,000 miles to sit on a bad leather couch in a control room and listen when, you know, listen through two speakers when I could just stay home and listen through two speakers and, you know, send comments through virtually.
Sure. My last question to you, Moby, is of all the tracks that landed up on the album, besides the wonderful cast that, that performed on it, is there one track that kind of surprised you in a way that you hadn't heard it before, or perhaps it realized in this iteration quite extraordinarily well for you?
Well, the track that really, for me, I mean, and self-involvedly and with no objectivity, I, of course, really like and love the music on this record, which maybe musicians are not supposed to admit that. But in this case, like, I think the music on Reprise, if I'm being honest, I love it. But the song that really surprised me and that I'm actually most grateful for its inclusion on the record is The Lonely Night with Kris Kristofferson and Mark Lanegan. Because the original version was an incredibly quiet, obscure song at the end of an obscure album. And so it's safe to say that, you know, like, you could count the number of people who've heard the original version probably on two hands. And so somehow having Kris Kristofferson's willingness to sing it, and he brought this emotional poignancy and gravitas to it. And I'm really glad that, you know, by orchestrating it, by re-recording all the elements, that I was able to draw attention to this song, because it's, you know, lyrically, compositionally, in terms of the arrangement, like, I feel like it's, there's something really special about it, and I'm thrilled. And when I say special, I'm almost in a way pointing to the things that I had nothing to do with, like Mark Lanegan and Chris Christopherson.
You keep good company, sir. So I think combined, you're doing extraordinary work. I would love to talk to you all day, sir, but thank you so, so much for taking the time to talk to me today. And congratulations again on an extraordinary body of work, not only Reprise, and all the very, very best with what's to follow. I'm very keen to see what the next chapter looks like.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.